Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. Getting today's news cycle started on News Radio WTAM 1100.
You got $30 on you? Matt Granite, the deal boss, Channel 3's Morning News, Will's Ways to Save. Some deals this morning, and you picked the number 30, I guess, to look at, right?
Absolutely, because, Bill, these days, $30 can't get you a whole lot.
You got to stretch it as far as you can. What'd you come up with?
So we're stretching our dollar. We're flexing our financial muscle today. And I found three items that benefit three different areas of your home. First, you know what? You pick your room. Pick any room. I'll find something for it.
Living room first, where we normally are.
All right. Perfect. Living room. The streaming audio deal that I found today is great on the go. Also great to pair with your TV for a workout, for blocking out the background noise, possibly a new baby when you and your wife are doing shifts. It's all fine.
Yeah.
Just a really solid pair of LifeProof wireless headphones. Usually retail for about $50-$55. They are down to $24.99 today. They perform well. You can watch my tests of me running with a shirt and tie on a treadmill to see how they stay in.
I saw that. You got to see that. Now, it could be the most important room, the kitchen. You got something there for us under $30?
Yes. Probably my favorite deal of the summer. It's a $70 8-inch French chef knife. So a knife that is good for cutting proteins and vegetables. One of the last knives you ever need to buy. Very versatile. Usually about $80. $24.99. If you go on to the Amazon review, which just popped, you're going to see one idiot that gave it one star. And he wrote, "I don't understand how this is a number one bestseller. It's only $24. Again, that person's a moron. We tested the chef knife with actual chefs from Food TV. It's amazing. And then the third item today is great for the emergency kit, outdoors, indoors. It's a collapsible emergency lantern.
Okay.
Great for a glove compartment. It could light up any dark area of your home. It will work for 72 hours straight on a couple of AA batteries, which are not included. So, Bill, again, 72 hours during storm season. Can't get better than that.
Good deals. All under $30. Matt Granite, the deal boss, watching him on 3 this morning back here. Tomorrow, WTAM.com, keyword save. We're out of time. Speaking of tomorrow, just can I ask you about back to school tomorrow?
You know what? I'm okay with that. All right. That time of the year.
All right. Granite, thanks. Have a good day.
Awesome.
I just wonder. I saw a bunch of people at Walmart last weekend buying stuff, and Granite hasn't mentioned back to school. So, well, I hate to mention it. Yeah, if you got kids, you know, that calendar's going to be changing next week. Mike Snyder Sports, mornings 15 and 45 past. They are on the field this morning, right?
Yeah, they will be this afternoon, actually, Bill. Coming off a season in which makes it accurate to say it cannot get any worse, the Browns will hit the practice field this afternoon, day one of training camp, while Browns GM John Dorsey believes Josh Gordon will return to the team at some point. He admitted yesterday that they are exploring the addition of another receiver and veteran Dez Bryant, a real diva who was cut by the Cowboys in March, has drawn some conversation.
I know what kind of person he is and what makes him. He's a very talented player. Have we had discussions about a Dez Bryant? Yeah, that's natural. You're going to have discussions like that. Now, we'll see what comes to fruition here in the next couple of days, but we've talked about it. I mean, you have to talk about these things.
Well, they do, and who knows with Josh Gordon. Now, the Browns did sign cornerback Denzel Ward to his rookie contract yesterday, so all of the draft picks will be on the field. Really, if there wasn't the Josh Gordon matter, it would be really a clean slate with the new GM calling the shots, a new offensive coordinator for Hugh Jackson, who's really kind of in a new role. More on the Browns in a moment. Indians snapped the Pirates' win streak at 11 with a 4-0 win at Progressive Field yesterday. Trevor Bauer, my gosh, has he been good this year, and he was great again yesterday. 7 innings of 2-hit ball with 10 more strikeouts, as Trevor put it.
You know, we lost 3 in a row. We haven't played very well in a couple of those games, and mostly that's what it was. But when you face a team that's hot like that, I enjoy that challenge. I enjoy meeting it head on. And, you know, look, they're rolling, and I wanted to see, you know, who's going to win.
I tell you, you got to mention him in the Cy Young conversation as of now. Edwin Encarnacion with a 2-run single. Yonder Alonso, a 2-run homer. But maybe the best news, after Bauer was lifted in the 8th, the new guys came in. Adam Simber induced a double play ball, and then Brad Hand came on, got a 4-out save. So the Indians get the win. They get a day off today. They will be in Detroit to meet the Tigers over the weekend. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100. Time for a Browns training camp report brought to you by your fantasy football destination, Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings Beer Sports. Now, despite selecting Baker Mayfield with the first pick in the draft, there is no quarterback controversy as the Browns start camp today, as Hugh Jackson puts it.
Tyrod Taylor's a starter. I mean, I don't envision any situation where all of a sudden he's getting a bunch of first-team reps, unless something, God forbid, something happens. But at the same time, I mean, there might be a day, please nobody hold me to it, a day where Tyrod all of a sudden maybe doesn't go and Baker's out there and people go, oh my gosh, here we go. It wouldn't be that.
So it will be Tyrod, the guy, very clearly put there by Hugh Jackson. You can see the Browns hit the fat practice field this afternoon beginning at 2:35. With your Browns update, I'm Mike Snyder.
Bill Zimper with me this morning on News Radio WTAM 1100. Speaking of senators, this is kind of funny. Orrin Hatch, Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah, looked himself up. He Googled himself. Is that right?
Yeah, a little internet search for Orrin Hatch, Bill, and he discovered that he had died on September 11th of last year, according to the internet search. But he is alive and well at the age of 84, will be retiring, of course, after this current Senate session. So it made us think about people that might be alive or might be dead. So we're going to play a little game with you this morning, Bill. Are you ready?
It's early. Make it easy. Go ahead.
All right. I'm sure you can. I'm counting on you to get 100% here. From the world of entertainment, actor Philip Seymour Hoffman, dead or alive?
Dead.
He is dead. Died in 2014 at the age of 47, tragically.
Yep.
Former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev.
Gone.
No, he's alive.
At
the age of 87, he is still alive. Was last seen at the Sochi Olympics back in 2014.
All right, missed
and
that.
Finally. One that should be easy for you, Bill. NFL Hall of Famer Chuck Bednarik.
Chuck who?
Chuck Bednarik, the 60-minute man from the Philadelphia Eagles. Come on now.
Oh, I'm going to guess alive.
No, Chuck Bednarik unfortunately died a few years ago, but lived to the ripe old age of 89. I expected better from you, Bill, this
morning. I told
you
it was early. You know, you mentioned that, though. The other day when they had the story about Frank Sinatra's first wife passing, I'm like, who thought she was still around? She was over 100.
It is amazing. You know, and then you look on this list and people like Kirk Douglas still going at
still
age
going.
101 and Doris Day at 96, recorded an album actually 5 years ago in her 90s. Pretty incredible, some of the people on this list.
Bill Zimper on it. You stay safe. We'll talk in the morning, okay?
You got it.
Thanks, Bill. Interesting story here. The National Security Agency, the NSA, all right, Inspector General, has issued a rare report condemning the administration for insufficiently protecting data gathered from us citizens. It's a semi-annual report to Congress by the agency's watchdog details, they say, many instances of noncompliance with the law by the agency's personnel dealing with rules meant to protect us, computer networks. Now, I caught up this week with Michael Chertoff. He was the second person in charge at Homeland Security. From 2005 to 2009. Homeland Security put together, of course, after 9/11. Interesting book he's got called Exploding Data, Reclaiming Our Cybersecurity in the Digital Age. And as much as we want to complain about what people know about us, we also sign up for all those frequent shopper cards. And as he said, that's kind of a gateway.
Whenever someone offers you something for free, usually you're paying with your information or your data. So bonus cards at the grocery store, credit cards, locational data on your phone, even your automobile may be generating information about your behavior. And what most people don't focus on is it's not just kept separately, but all of this can be actually collected in one place or sold, and then someone can look across all of your data fields and get a very accurate, detailed picture of everything that you do.
Interesting conversation we had. If you missed it yesterday, it's up on the podcast. You can do a search on the iHeartRadio app podcast, Wills and Snyder. Just go to WTAM.com podcast page. Autocross tours, all with Corvettes, people that have a passion for that car. And the annual Corvette-only car show to raise money for Guidestone, a cause near and dear to my heart, happens on Sunday. And so thankful for what they have done over the years in raising money and awareness with Guidestone. Paul Campbell of Corvette Cleveland on the hotline. Paul, appreciate the time. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning, Bill. Glad to be here.
Tell me about the car. What do you got?
Well, the show, as you said, is going to be this Sunday. It's our 16th annual show. Show benefits Ohio Guidestone. It's a local charity, and it provides services for children and families.
And
the show is hosted by Corvette Cleveland, and which is a local Corvette club in Corsa Performance, best known for their performance exhaust systems.
Thanks to Corsa for their help. It's in Berea on Sunday, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's at Corsa's headquarters. They're located at 140 Blaze Industrial Parkway in Berea. Registration is going to begin at 9:30, and the show runs from 10 to 3 with award presentations beginning around 2.
We'll have food, music there. Aloha Phil going to be playing the tunes. 10 o'clock it starts, showtime, 10 to 3, rain or shine, of course. Great time to walk around, look at vets. Paul, how about your ride? What do you have?
Well, I've got a 2008 C6. It's a coupe, crystal red. It's a nice, shiny car, gets a lot of attention, but it's not really a show car. This show will have all kinds of fantastic painted cars, lots of chrome, lots to look at. This year, we're also featuring the Corvette ZR1. That's what they call their King of the Hill. We're going to have models from several different years, and we'll have at least one 755 horsepower 2019 model.
Wow. So that's yeah. Corvette Club Cleveland, the annual show to help raise money for Ohio Guidestone, and that's Sunday. And I know the Corvette Cleveland website's got a lot of good info. If you're interested in joining and being involved, just having some fun with your Corvette, Corvette Cleveland's a great way to connect, right?
You got it. And if you want just information on the show, you can go to Corvette's show at CorvetteCleveland.org.
Paul Campbell, Paul, thank you, and a shout-out to everybody involved in Corvette Cleveland, especially our friend Pauline Danzy, who's helped coordinate these things over the years. Really appreciate it, and especially all the work done at Ohio Guidestone. Paul, thanks much.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great day. Appreciate it. The White House, a little sound of the press yesterday, yelling at the president and going in and out of some meetings.
Thank you very much.
The guy that used to also have to wave off the press and answer a few questions once in a while, Sean Spicer, joins me now.
And now, 5 Good Minutes.
The book is from Sean Spicer, and it is called The Briefing. He joins me on News Radio, WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Sean, I appreciate your time. Good morning.
Hey, thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. It's good to virtually be back in Cleveland.
I love politics. I love stories. I love presidents, and I love writing and reading about them. Your story, let me take you right to Cleveland. I'm on Radio Row, and I'm just the morning show in Cleveland, Ohio. But even I noticed after a couple days, the establishment was nowhere to be found. They had their heads down if they showed up. Kasich's not even there. You kind of had a strange feeling while you're in Cleveland. Take me to Cleveland. Tell me some stories.
I actually, there's a great story in the book about what was going on the convention floor. But first of all, I would just say, you know, what a great host Cleveland was. I was
Thank you. It was just
the people there, and it's for me, as you know, I wasn't just the convention. We were obviously back and forth there a lot as we planned for that convention. I was so impressed with that city and its people. They were so excited to host a convention. As you're well aware, the city doesn't exactly lean Republican, but they understood what a great opportunity that was. And I talk in the book about going to Cleveland and some of the stuff that happened on the floor. It was an interesting time. I mean, think about this. You're going to a convention. I'd been, obviously, to a few conventions in the past, and there's this huge movement afoot before the convention even starts, by a group of people to open up the floor and open up to allowing another candidate names be placed in nomination. And so it was historic in so many ways, not because of what happened, but almost because of the lead-up. This idea, I mean, I joke in the book that when we were going into the previous convention in Tampa, we have this thing called the Rules Committee that meets prior to the convention, and I'm writing in the book, I go, you know, I think we had like 10 requests for media credentials the week before the convention starts, where a lot of the rules and procedures get laid out.
Right.
And here we go into Cleveland, and we have like 300 requests. and it was just fascinating because you know, they all wanted to cover the nuances. Was there going to be a petition? There was a petition being circulated to whether or not we let additional candidates be placed in the nomination, whether we abandon the rules or modify the rules that had been used in the last convention. And the cool thing about the book, and you know, I appreciate your interest in politics because there were so many things where I wanted to make sure that these stories didn't get lost
right.
in history.
Right.
And it was so fast-paced. Just whether it was the convention, the general election, the debates, the transition, and that part of why I really wanted to write this book, I mean, there's a few reasons, but one of them is because, you know, all of these stories, and one of them deals with the floor in Cleveland and what was going on down there, is that if we don't tell them and put them down, then at some point 10 years from now, I was going to say, well, remember, what was it that happened?
Right.
And so I really wanted to make sure that those things got captured.
The book is The Briefing. Sean Spicer with me on WTAM 1100. Okay, I love the inside stuff. Look, the Democrats, you got Bernie Sanders winning the primaries, but he's not winning the delegates. The whole thing was fixed going in for Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, the Republicans, we saw it here in Cleveland, almost the stun that the quote-unquote establishment felt, and you touch on that really several times in the book.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, I wrote this book, The Briefing, because I wanted people to understand what was happening behind the scenes. And there are these, you know, and I literally call it The Briefing for a reason, because it's a way of letting people know what's going on. And there were all of these different, you know, before the debates, before the convention, here's, you know, the exchanges that are happening and the environment and the mood and the activity, and so all of these different things. There was nothing that was boring or quiet or I mean, it was just so transformative and historical in so many ways. If you're a political, you know, if you're a history buff, if you're political, whatever it is, I mean, there's so many people that now politics has become pop culture for that. You know, I get asked all the time on the road, tell me what it was like behind the scenes,
right?
And these things. And so I loved the opportunity to write The Briefing because it gave me that opportunity.
The book is The Briefing, maybe Common Ground, a TV show. Let me get you out here on this. Every administration's micro analysis of the early days, every administration makes missteps. It seems like this one made more than normal, or was it just the media being so analytical?
Wow, that's a good question. I think it's a mixed bag. I think that if you look at, right, if you think about every president before has been a politician, you know, Obama was a United States Senator, Bush was a governor, Clinton was a governor. In other words, they come to office with a team and a staff that has worked with them, with many even worked with each other, worked with the president at the time. This was a disruptive president who brought people who didn't run a conventional campaign by any standards, meaning there wasn't a big group of people that he brought to Washington with him that had been part of the campaign. It was a pretty bare bones campaign in the traditional sense. So there was a lot of getting to know each other, getting to know the president. And frankly, this president didn't come to Washington to kind of continue what had been done in the past. He wanted real results and wanted them as soon as possible. And therefore, there was a lot of disruption going on.
Sean's book, The Briefing, great read. Sean, thank you so much for your time. Good luck with it.
Thanks, Bill. It's been great to be back in Cleveland.
Mr. Cavalier, Austin Carr on the hotline. Morning, AC.
Good morning, Bill. How you doing?
Before I forget, have you given anybody a putt since we played 3 weeks ago? Because you weren't given anything that day. I love it. You putt them out. You're one of the best.
Well, it's hard to give putts because, to me, yeah, that's part of the game. So when you play the game, you play it all the way from the beginning to the end.
His handicap is true, unlike some of us.
So in other words, on the putting green, Austin, you're like Will Chamberlain was to you when you went down the lane as a rookie.
Yeah,
you don't
right.
give nothing, right?
That's right.
Austin, as we have you on, I know we're going to talk. You've got a camp coming up. You'll be working with young people here. But your reaction to the Cavs' decision to extend Kevin Love the way they did this week?
Well, I kind of figured that they would do that. When you look at it, Kevin has been there for quite a while. I mean, he's had his ups and downs, but you know, at this point, especially with LeBron gone, we got to have somebody that can lead us through this new era. And he deserves a shot at it.
You know, the first time LeBron left Austin, I think it was devastating. This time, though, I look at this team, and there are a lot of components there with the draft pick, Colin Sexton, with Love and some of the veterans. It looks like it's going to be interesting to see what this group can do next year, isn't it?
Yeah, well, to me, we're in a much better place than we were last time when LeBron left. So the team is, but again, you have to do it on the floor. But I think they're in a much better shape than they were last time, and I'm kind of anxious to see how they're going to do. Also, I like the way Mr. Sexton goes about his business. Granted, he has to improve on on a couple areas, but you know, he's a worker, so you know he can do that. But I like his aggressiveness because that's what I thought the team was missing anyway. And I think he's going to bring something to us that we sorely need. And is Jetty's playing? I mean, so it's not like we're the cupboard is bare, so we have an opportunity to really surprise a lot of people, I think.
Mr. Cavalier, Austin Carr with us. Want to mention the Austin Cavalier basketball camp presented by Blue Streak Summer Camp. She'll be at Beechwood High School. This thing's July 30 through the 3rd. Right. Runs 9:30 in the morning till 2:30. Ages 5 to 16. Is that right, AC?
Right, ages 5 to 16, and really, when I started this thing years ago, I kind of wanted to get away from just throwing the ball out there and letting the guys play. So we spent half the morning with fundamentals and getting prepared and knowing how to play the game, and then we play games in the afternoon. So we kind of mix it up, and then so the kids will understand what they're doing when they do it. And that's kind of how I've kind of done this thing for the last 15 years. So I'm enjoying it right now.
And the fundamentals are so key, aren't they, AC? I mean, teach the game the right way, right?
Well, that's what it's all about. And you can see from a lot of levels that kids are not getting the fundamentals taught to them the right way. But the ones that do are the ones that rise to the top. So that's what I'm trying to do is get them to at least understand the game so they can enjoy the game and have fun at playing it.
I know Campy Russell is helping you. I would presume
yes.
Campy is teaching the passing. You're not teaching passing. You're teaching more of the shooting?
Well, I know. I'm doing the shooting part of it, and Campy does do that. Campy's going to be one of our guest speakers.
All right.
Camp, so, wait a minute, I know how to pass. I just didn't do a lot of it.
You didn't have to, pal.
No, Austin, you can score the way Austin can score. Yeah, we funnel the ball to you, AC.
Okay.
Austin Carr still holds the NCAA tournament record.
Yes,
most points in one game, 61 against Ohio in 1970. Pal, thank you so much for your time. We're going to post the info. It's through Blue Streak Summer Camps, Austin Carr Basketball Camp featuring Campy Russell, Beechwood High School, July 30 through August 3rd. Starts at 9:30 each morning till 2:30 for boys and girls 5 to 16. Pal, thanks for the time this morning. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
And now, 5 good minutes.
And maybe some more. Talking about our town region, Joe Romanin heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership. Stops in about once a month. So good to see you, first of all.
Good to see you.
Jim Tomey into the Hall of Fame. We're all baseball fans. 8:20 this morning. We've been talking Tomey all week at 8:20. Charlie Manuel this morning, Jim DeMar. You had a Tomey you wanted to share?
Yeah, it was interesting. In 1995, so it was the second year of the... The Jake at that time was open,
yeah.
And we were right in the middle of that. Every game was sold out record. And my wife and I were there at the game. It was a nice Saturday afternoon, I think, and it was first three times up. We're there with our daughter,
yeah,
1-year-old daughter. First three times up, Tomey cracks three gargantuan Tomey-like home runs, you know. And I'm thinking, here, Jim Tomey, he's going to tie my other favorite hero in Cleveland, Rocky Colavito, with four home runs in one game. It was so loud, though. Amy, my wife, made the right decision. She said, our daughter can't handle all this noise. You know, she's 1 year old, so we got to leave. We got to leave with three home runs? So I delayed as long as I could. We ended up, when he came up for the fourth time, we were out by the home run porch watching, and sure enough, he hits a long drive, gets to the fence, they catch it. By his fifth time up, we're in the car, and I'm listening, and again, he hits a long, you know, one of those long, and they catch it.
And they catch
it. Was I glad. I was never more happy that the guy didn't hit four homers. Isn't that terrible?
Because
I could have been there to see it.
That's a great story. But you saw three of them,
right? I saw three of them, yep.
Yeah, what a weekend. Jim into the Hall of Fame. Charlie Manuel later at
it's a wonderful, wonderful weekend for him. He deserves it.
Let me go through my list. I had a great story the other day. We all did, I think. Cleveland Hopkins Airport, $4.7 million. We're up like over 7%. And not just people switching planes, right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. The good news is, as we always predicted, but it's even coming true more than we thought. This is a strong market, and it's growing in many sectors. We have our challenges, we know that, But we do have more and more companies needing to move around not only the North American continent, but the world. And we're seeing that as they fly through Hopkins. And I think we're going to continue to see the traffic at Hopkins grow and more airlines look to Hopkins as a place where they can do business.
96% of the Cleveland-Hopkins passenger traffic represents the so-called origination destination.
That's right. And that really means they're leaving the airport to do business in your community, which is what's important.
Good stuff. Okay, getting around town, RTA, we see it. We know there's going to be a change at the top. Joe Calabrese, who had announced earlier retirement, he's going to segue into another role for a while as they put somebody in the interim business. Greater Cleveland Partnership, one thing you have stepped up many times to help parts of our community. Look, you've got some of the best minds in business that run very successful companies, so let's put them to work.
Yes, we've done this most recently with the Cleveland schools around the Cleveland plan, and it's really been part of our public private partnership history. So what we've offered to RTA, and we're going to work on this together, Joe's going to be a big part of it even as he transitions, and that is we're going to bring executives from companies in HR and finance and logistics into RTA, work with the RTA team to see if there are some additional ways to gain efficiencies. This isn't a criticism of RTA. This is just bringing a different sector, a private sector, into the public sector to see if there are additional ways to save revenues and do their business a little differently. That worked at the schools, but what really happens then is you get a cadre of business leaders who understand the transit system more than they could in any other way, and transit is critical to business.
And help promote RTA within.
Absolutely.
It's almost like Leadership Cleveland in some ways. You learn about different things, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then in the event someday RTA believes that seeking more revenue is part of a plan, then it can be linked not only to a very efficient organization, but a vision for how new revenues could get spent.
Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership, a couple more minutes here. I did a piece with our buddy Mark Bone over at the Plain Dealer the other day about this, the Ohio City Galley. That looks to be amazing.
It is amazing, but it's just another Ohio. I mean, you can. We were talking the other day. Some of our and the trick here for this community is the West. Some of the West Side neighborhoods are ahead of some of the East Side, and the real long-term goal for our community is to start seeing, and it's starting, no doubt about it, but to see a Glenville become a Tremont or you know, a Fairfax become an Ohio City, and not to mimic it,
but to
see the same health factors, the same growth, the same residential markets, the same acceleration start to take place, and I think we can make that happen.
We get one destination, one new restaurant, as you say, something where the buzz is. You got to get there. You got to go.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Like restaurants like to be around other restaurants.
Yeah.
That's what works.
One other note, Rainbow Center for Women and Children, I know you're involved in this and care dearly. Tell me about this.
Yeah, we're an investor there. We're sometimes people don't realize that our real estate fund is really investing in things other than downtown. So we for instance have recently made investments in Salvation Army buildings. Mm-hmm. We've made investments in St. Martin de Porres High School. So we're making investments in healthcare, in Lutheran Metropolitan Ministries and social service areas, in housing in the neighborhoods. And it really is a tool that the corporate community, I think, should be very proud of in Cleveland, Ohio.
We keep doing good. Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership, thanks for the time and the
you
story
bet.
About Tomy.
Good to see
good
you.
Stuff. Thanks, pal. Appreciate it.
Well, we are spending this week really celebrating Jim Tomy going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And Jimmy, of course, has said it every time when you ask him. He wouldn't be going there if it wasn't for this man. And we go to our hotline now, and we welcome Charlie Manuel to the show. Charlie, thank you for your time today. First off, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing very good. Everything's real good. I get to see a lot of baseball games, minor league and amateur baseball. I'm up in Philadelphia quite a bit. And I definitely can stay busy.
That's good. Well, baseball, I mean, Charlie, you're a baseball lifer, and what you've given to the game, and you've helped so many players along the way. We are talking about Jimmy today. Charlie, you remember early when you first saw him. What was it? You two did create an incredible bond. What did you see in Jimmy early?
Well, you know what I saw? I saw a very young guy. You know, like he was like, when I first met him, he just got through playing rookie ball, and I met him in spring training in Tucson the next year in the minor leagues. And you know, like he was very young, and he was a real young 18 or 19 year old kid, really. But he had he had something that you know, like that you don't teach. And he had good strength. He was strong, and he was young. He was developing, and you know, like his strength and the fact that when he hit the baseball, you know, like it was a different sound, and it actually came off the bat hard.
You know, I heard, Charlie, that in his development days that you and him would work together for like 2 hours. This was even before BP. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Jimmy, sometime when I talked to him and everything, we sitting around some people, you know, like I think he forgets, you know, like how much he actually practiced and hit and everything.
And of course, you were giving him your time, so there was a bond you had. You really liked him from the get go, didn't you?
I liked him from right from the get go. You know, like the more I think about it, you know what? Jimmy was a quick learner. I mean, he was very coachable. He would try anything that you'd ask of him, and he loved to hit, and he put all the time in, and actually he set out to master his hitting.
Charlie, just following up on that, I know he talked about it on the day that he got the Hall of Fame call. I know you were talking with folks about him too, but so this is true. The scenario, though, that you were, is this true that you walked in, they were watching The Natural, and you looked up at the screen, the guys were, Jimmy was there with some other guys, they're watching the movie, and they see Roy Hobbs, and you looked and you said to Jimmy, hey, that's what you need to do, start pointing your bat that way. Is that right? Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. You know, like, I'll be glad to share that with you. Was in Scranton. Was playing in Scranton, and it was a kind of early afternoon game, like, and I walked through the clubhouse, and actually, when you know, like, once at a certain time, you know, I always had a rule, you know, like you cut the television off and things like that, and get ready for the game. Well, The Natural was on, and you know, like, and our players were sitting in there, and they were watching, and I told them to turn the TV off. And right before I did that, you know, like, they kept saying, hey, Charlie, just let us watch it 5 or 10 more minutes or something. And, you know, like, I was just standing there kind of watching it with them, and it showed Hobbs at the plate, you know, like, pointing his bat. And, you know, like, I've been trying to get a trigger for Jimmy, a little rhythm, balance and rhythm, and kind of a trigger, you know, like a load. And I looked at him, and I said, that's you. I said, that right there. I said, that I'll definitely work on you. And I said, come on, let's go down in the cage. And actually, we left. When I got dressed, we left and went right to the cage, right underneath the stands there. And, you know, like, and he started hitting that way. And in the game that day, he hit a home run in left center the first time up on a left-hand pitcher named Abbott. And then he hit another one off of Taylor, the right field. You know, like standing, loading like that, and he's been doing that ever since.
Wow, wow! And the rest is history, and here he is now in the Hall of Fame. Charlie, go ahead, Charlie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, like, but you know, like, at first he didn't want to do that because you know, like he thought that was showing a pitcher up, and he thought, well, you know, like if I do that, you know, like they'll throw at me and things like that. But then, you know, like once he started doing it, he kind of got over that, and he did it his whole career.
And you were looking at it as just something kind of a, like you said, a trigger, kind of a timing thing, and also even to calm him down a little bit, right?
Exactly, right.
Charlie Manuel with us talking about Jim Thome. Hey, Charlie, a quick thought from you. You know, Tomey's part of that 95 Indians team. And I said, you know, you were the hitting coach, but we have a lineup where Jim Tomey's hitting sixth and Manny Ramirez is hitting seventh. That's a heck of a lineup, isn't it?
Hey, on that time, that's a good lineup. You know, like, but that right there is what we strive for. I remember Mike Hargrove, you know, he was the manager, and he used to tell me all the time, he says, the only thing you think about is your hitting. And I said, well, I look at it, if we score more runs than the other team, we're going to win the game. And at the same time, I want every hitter we got to be the best in baseball. And he'll remember that if you ask him, because, you know, like I used to tell him that. But yeah. But getting back to it, too, you know, like in those days, we had a tremendous lineup. And, you know, like in that – and that's hard to find. I mean, nowadays there are some good lineups in the big leagues, but we had a great balance. If you remember, probably at one time when we had Lofton, Viscale, and Robbie Alomar at the top of the lineup, and then we had all those other guys once you get to Bell and Tommy, Eddie Murray and them, you know, we had a big time lineup.
It really was. Yeah, it was amazing to think Tommy and Ramirez were hitting 6 and 7. Charlie, while we have you now, Jim Tomey going into the Hall, what's kind of going through your mind now as we get close to that moment where he goes in with the greatest of all time, your guy that you've worked with and who loves you? What's kind of going through your mind as that day draws near?
You know, I get excited about it. I got, you know, like when it was announced that he was going in the Hall of Fame, it took me a while to really calm down. You know, like I'm really excited about it, and you know, like to think that as good as I know Jimmy and all the years I was with him, you know, like and you know, like basically how Jimmy's life has developed, you know, like, and he you know, like I think it's absolutely amazing, you know, like, and I can't wait to get there, you know, like, and see the ceremony, and you know, like, and be able to congratulate him, and you know, like, and that's about all I can say about it.
It's going
to
be,
you know, actually, I don't need to really talk a whole lot about him because he's as good as, you know, like, he's one of the best baseball hitters that played the game.
First of all, a shout out to fans there as you and Tom were talking day baseball. It draws. It's been amazing. Great crowd yesterday.
It was a remarkable crowd, and I think we've seen this before on the midweek day games. I looked up in the fourth or fifth inning. There were still people wandering in off the plaza, and you know, I think sometimes maybe they're at work and they just cut out early or something like that, but it was a beautiful day. It's baseball in the summertime midweek. I mean, if you're ever going to just say take the afternoon off or part of it, that was the day to do it, and it filled up nicely. More than 30,000 there yesterday.
And, Jim, as far as the Tribe goes, it is something in baseball how on one day everything can seem to be so wrong, and the next day everything seems to be right, and all was right yesterday, wasn't it?
Well, Mike, doesn't it always go back to pitching, too, and sometimes starting pitching? Because Trevor Bauer just set the tone, and he kind of set it early. He hit a batter, the second hitter of the game, Starling Marte, and he didn't mean to do that, but he pitches inside consistently, and the way the Pirates hitters were swinging in the first two games of the series, he had to do that, and he does it anyway, and does it about as well as anybody on that starting staff, and he hit a batter, and it just seems like that opens up the outside part of the plate for that tremendous breaking pitch that he has. But he was tremendous, and that just set the tone. When you get that good pitching, everything else always seems to fall into place.
And the new guys, Simber and Hand, coming in, you couldn't have asked to see it unfurl any better than it did with those two, Jim.
Yeah, and first time, really, where they weren't just coming on to get some work in. You know, where they came on in a tight ball game, the game on the line, and they got the job done, and both were really impressive. Simber with the double play ball, and then Hand just blowing through the last four hitters of the game. And I think you'll see more of that. I really do. And Tito had said when Han got here that if there was a situation where in the ninth inning it matched up well with left-handed hitters, he would use him to close out a game, and he did, and the results were tremendous.
Ninth shutout of the year, third most in the American League, 4-0 win yesterday. Off today up to Detroit, then on up to Minnesota?
Yeah, interesting road trip. Tigers for the weekend, and then the Twins, who, you know, the Indians have tried to put them away. They've kind of hung around, and it'll be interesting to see what the spread is by the time the Indians get there on Monday. But certainly it could be an interesting series in Minnesota for sure.
Mr. Fan Fact Answer, do you recall anyone from the 2002 Triple-A All-Star Game, a name that we might know?
Oh, goodness gracious. Man, that's a tough one because they turn over so much. I remember it was in Oklahoma City. How's that?
Close enough.
But, yeah, player-wise, holy mackerel, I'd have to go back through the box score to find it.
ISDN, phone line, or satellite?
I think all three. And we got the job done.
Minor league ball, however you get on the air, you get on the air.
A string and a couple of cups on
right.
Each end.
Well, really hadn't changed much in some ways. All right, Rosie, thanks. Enjoy your day. See you, buddy.
You got it, guys.